Does COVID have you feeling stalled at work? Cornell ILR Professional Education can help you get back on the road to career growth. Visit discover.ilr.cornell.edu to get started.
Work is all around us. It defines us. The future of work impacts nearly every person on our planet. And the ILR School at Cornell University is influencing policy and practice around the world. In this episode of Work, Exploring the Future of Work, Labor, and Employment, Dean Alex Colvin speaks with Carla Grant Pickens, Global Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer and Vice President, Leadership, Development, and Inclusion for IBM, as well as Vanessa Bonds, ILR Associate Professor and author of the book, You Have More Influence Than You Think.
Thanks to both Carl and Vanessa for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to hearing from both of them and their insights. The topic we're talking about today, the impact of the pandemic on work-life issues, is something that I think we've all become far more familiar with than perhaps we ever could have imagined a couple of years ago. The pandemic's broken down barriers between our home and our work lives to a really profound extent and transformed the way that we think about that work-life interrelationship. Nowadays, with the availability of highly effective vaccines, we're seeing more people returning to the office, but we also know that the office isn't the same as it was before the pandemic. Things have changed both in our home and our work lives. A higher quality of work-life balance is something that we're seeing lots of employees demanding, some of them even choosing to move away from existing jobs because of the transformative experience of the last year and a half. Here at ILR, we've been studying issues around the workplace for some 75 years since we were founded. And we've had a history of exploring the tensions and conflicts that have always existed between employees and organizations. We've been studying both the natural conflicts that arise, but also the potentials for collaboration. Today, we're going to be exploring that in the context of these new issues that arise in figuring out the work-life balance in a situation where we're working in a different way than we ever worked before. As we think about navigating through these difficult times, we know that it's put extraordinary challenges on leaders in business and beyond. I'm going to turn to you, Carla, first off, to ask you a little about how your organization, how IBM, has helped navigate through this period of uncertainty.
We've been very, very intentional at IBM about how we're responding to the impact of remote work. We found that, as you've stated, you know, women were significantly impacted. So we really focused in on listening to our employees, listening to their needs. And we actually co-created with them. And out of that, very organically, we had the Work From Home Pledge that came out of the women's community. And it was really all about how we were going to respect boundaries, how, like you stated, you're so exposed with your work life and seeing a broader lens of what home looks like, your kids coming into the picture, your spouses and others. And so people felt that I can't be 100% during the day because there are many things that could be going on in my home. And so we addressed that in many of one days. We kind of did what we call like kind of crowdsourcing, getting feedback on, well, what do you need to be adaptable, to be resilient? What's going to help with the success of working remotely? One of the biggest areas we heard most about was, hey, you know, I really need the ability to take time off. So we provided additional time for leave. We also provided additional time off if you wanted to take a leave of absence, if you wanted to potentially move to a part-time schedule. So we really did offer flexibilities where we really address the needs with employees, meeting them where they were. Where we're extremely focused, and our CHRO is talking about this quite a bit, is being intentionally flexible. And this is going to look differently for every company and for every team. The other thing that we did is tools. So tools became really, really important to engage and collaborate. So new ways of working, like we're on Zoom today, we use things to create, co-create, and really ensure we're going to continue to be able to be innovative and get to one another quickly. So we use things like Box for files and WebEx, and we use Slack. So lastly, we really, really, again, focused on meeting employees where they are. So that means our managers and our leaders, we had to provide them with guides and guidelines on how to be better leaders and how to communicate more frequently, more transparently in this remote world.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, that the intentionality about why we're doing things. I think that's one of the things the pandemic's forced us to do, is think about what we're doing. A lot of our existing routines were broken up, and now we're operating in a different manner. So we have to, it forces us essentially to think about how we're approaching things. So another thing that was interesting that you mentioned is the question about how this has impacted disproportionately women versus men. And one of the things we know in the societal research is that women continue to bear a higher proportion of the burden of care, both childcare and elder care. As an organization, how do you think about coming out of, hopefully out of the pandemic, and maintaining momentum around achieving gender equity in the organizations, given all that we've been through?
Yeah. So look, you know, we went into last year really thinking about this. We weren't sure what the impact would be. And we saw right away that 2 million women left the workforce, like in the first half. And then our Institute of Business Value did a study, and that ended up growing to like 5 million women globally. And it's just growing. And so we really did focus in on having goals, really being transparent and setting goals with intention around how we were going to grow, continue to grow our workforce, and how we wanted to make sure we retained our women and our people of color across our diverse lines, across all of our diverse groups. So we really began to talk about, let's make room. A lot of people say, how are you making room to ensure you're growing in an inclusive way? And so we did really focus in on how we were going to engage through sponsorship. We created some programs, our women's programs. We continue with the programs that we would normally do face-to-face. We made them virtual. We expanded them virtually. We had guest speakers. We made them really interactive. And we also did inclusion leadership training. So we thought that it was important that we did a few things. We were amidst a pandemic. We also had a race crisis that hit us really shortly after the pandemic. And what we heard from our employees was, hey, you know, I think it's really, really important that our leaders need to really learn how to do better at really being more empathetic and compassionate. And they need to really learn about topics and get uncomfortable. We've heard that quite a bit with being comfortable with being uncomfortable with topics you're not used to discussing. So we did spend time. We trained 30,000 managers across the globe around empathy and compassion and this resiliency and how to make sure that your teams can remain resilient. We also deployed diversity and equity, diversity and inclusion training. And then we also deploy how to have a conversation about race, a race module, a digital offering with the conversation guide. And we offered workshops we're continuing to do with our managers, understanding identity and understanding intersectionality and how to really build more inclusive behaviors in the workplace. And that's been going on pretty much for the past 18 months.
So an incredibly busy agenda, despite, you know, everything we're dealing with in the pandemic, right? Which I think is one of those, you know, important lessons that there's a lot of important issues that, you know, we couldn't really leave aside during this period. And it's, you know, it's been a longer period, I think, than many of us had hoped. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, we had to keep addressing things and not let the time pass by. I want to turn now to Vanessa. And I want to ask you a question. As you're a social psychologist and you study influence and conflict, what should people and organizations consider as we navigate these kind of new work-life realities we've been talking about?
When I think of the challenges presented by the shift to sort of more hybrid or remote work from a more psychological or organizational behavior research sort of perspective, interestingly, so many of the things you've already been talking about and so many of the solutions really show up there as well. And I think looking at that literature, there's really three main issues that pop up that I think we want to be aware of. So the first one is the risk that in a remote hybrid world, certain voices start to get left out of important conversations, right? And specifically, those voices tend to be the people who are working from home, who may want to impact decisions that they care about, but they simply don't have as much impact as the people who are on the ground in the office. And that's for some very basic reasons, right? It's easy to stay top of mind when you're physically present with other people. There's just a basic level of attention we give to other people in our vicinity that's evolutionary. We just pay more attention to actual physical people around us. Research on social influence actually shows that when we are trying to make a point, when we're doing it through a mediated communication channel, our words do have less impact. We're less impactful when we try to do it in a mediated way than if we're actually face-to-face with someone. We simply lose a lot of the nonverbals that you get when you're face-to-face, not to mention the fact that you also don't know a lot about the group dynamics that are happening in a room that you're not actually in. So that's the first challenge I see. The second challenge I see is this blurring of work-life boundaries, right, that can happen when people are working from home to result in burnout. Connectivity is a great thing. The idea behind it is that, you know, it should give us a lot of flexibility. We can work anytime from anywhere, right? But I think a lot of us have seen that actually results in us working all the time from everywhere. And so that's not good for anyone because that's the kind of condition that can lead to burnout. And we know that burnout has all sorts of negative consequences for individuals, but also for the organization, right? It leads to disengaged employees. It leads to dissatisfied employees. It leads to employees who leave. So that's a second issue I can see. And then a third issue that is a sort of a challenge to keep in mind is this idea that conflict can escalate much quicker and much more intensely when you're communicating through mediated channels and when people are in different locations than in person. So just like you have more sort of innate attention in person, you also kind of have this default of trust, the social connection with someone else in person. We can imagine, you know, there are things that I would never say to someone in person that maybe I feel comfortable saying when there's this distance, and especially over email. There's lots of miscommunication that can happen over email, especially, right? Miscommunication of tone, for example. And so when you're not having difficult conversations in person and when you're trying to have these difficult conversations from a distance through mediated channels, there's this potential for greater conflict. And so those are sort of the three challenges that I can see coming from hybrid work that we would want to be aware of.
So, you know, each of those seems a substantial challenge to deal with. What do we think about for solutions in addressing them?
It's important to think of solutions at kind of two levels, right? We see so many articles out there with individual solutions, and I think there is a place for those. But we also want to think about these more sort of systemic, practice-oriented, normative kinds of solutions that aren't just about the responsibility is on you to stay relevant, to protect your time, to, you know, manage this yourself, but we are actually going to implement broader policies and practices that actually make this easier for everyone. So that's what one of the reasons I love so many of the policies that Carla was talking about. So if you start just, for example, from the first one that I was talking about, this idea that, you know, some voices maybe have less impact if they're at home and they're trying to, you know, influence decisions that are taking place in the workplace. And research shows that actually the content of what you say matters more when you are in a mediated context than if you're in person. In person, you can get away with kind of saying things, jumping in, you know, it's smoother. There's more nonverbals. When you're kind of the box on Zoom, you have to have a specific thing that you're going to say and your words actually matter. So part of the individual solution is actually planning out what you're going to say, planning out the content of your argument. But then at the same time, there has to be a broader awareness of the fact that these kinds of conversations are putting those people at a disadvantage, right? And so practices that could be implemented to sort of counteract that. So one really simple example is that you don't just go in and say, okay, here's what we're thinking, you know, anyone opposed, done, right? You actually take the time to go through each individual who's at the meeting and ask them what they think. And everybody gets time, everybody gets space to say their opinion. And that ensures that, you know, you don't have this cohort that's most likely the people who have been seeing each other in the office, who have it all figured out and everyone feels like they have to follow suit. So that's one thing. If we turn to sort of the second big issue that I mentioned, the burnout issue, there's a lot of suggestions for how to individually manage burnout. So, for example, you can designate certain areas in your home to be, you know, work-free zones where I don't do work here. This is my leisure time and my leisure place. But again, it's up to everybody, right? And so there are certain things, for example, Carla was mentioning taking time off, right? That's huge. But we've seen that there are organizations that allow people to take as much time off as they'd like, and no one does it because no one is seeing anybody else do it. No one at the higher levels are doing it. And so part of it is modeling that, taking advantage of these resources, and also paying attention to the norms that we're setting that impacts everybody's ability to sort of manage their work-life balance. So one thing my colleague Laura Gerge and I have done is look at studies where people send emails, you know, during the time that works for them, right? Maybe in the evening, that's when I can get my emails done. So I send out my emails. But maybe for you, that's the time that you're unwinding. And I don't expect you to get back to me right away, but I don't make that explicit, right? You might think, oh my gosh, now I need to respond during my off time, right? So we're really good at conveying when something's urgent. We have like our all caps urgent in the subject line. We have our red exclamation points, but we're not as good at conveying when, you know, this is my time for work. You get back to me when it's your time for work. This is not urgent. And so setting norms where you communicate that this is not urgent, get to it on your time, is another sort of practice that we can implement. And then the last thing in terms of conflict, and I know, Alex, you'll probably have more to say about the conflict issue, but a lot of our intuitions about how to manage conflict are off. And we often forget that in person, face-to-face is best. If not, richer communication is best. We tend to think we can lay out our point in an email point by point, you know, as conflict is rising. But in fact, that's where things can get really rough and tricky and a lot of tone is lost.
Yeah, just picking up on that last point about how we think about dealing with conflict. In my field, studying conflict resolution is that during the pandemic, there's been a really surprising, I think, explosion of use of more richer conflict resolution mechanisms like mediation, particularly online, and where you could have the engaged conversation about the conflicts that were going on. And to your point about this sort of email list as not really being a rich form of conversation, when you could actually get the Zoom or Teams meeting where you'd have a conversation, you could ask questions. Effective mediators were being able to use that effectively, but I think it was because of that richer communication medium that people were using. The other thing that was jumping out of my head is you were talking about calling on individuals, and you can go around the group that way. And we seem to do that more than we did in the traditional kind of team format. There's this tricky elements. One of the things I've been noticing when we're coming back to work in the office is how to manage when you've got a hybrid team with some people in person and some remote, and you do like a meeting and some of you in a conference room and some of you are online. I'd be curious, Carla, what your experience at IBM has been like with that, and sort of how do you manage this sort of hybrid space now? We've got some hybrid teams, some people remote, some people in person. I mean, what do we do there?
Yeah, so we've actually been upgrading all of our physical facilities, but we have really started this work of really providing these really open, agile workspaces where people could come together, they could do stand-ups, they can, you know, rally around a whiteboard, less offices, more open spaces, and large tables or places you can co-create. And sometimes what that means is, and a really great example of that is, you know, we discussed potentially having a meeting and everyone couldn't be face-to-face. So we decided, well, you know what, we're not going to have part of the group face-to-face and the other part not face-to-face. Everybody will be remote so that everybody will be on a fair playing ground. And like you said, Vanessa, I really, really love the reach out, having going around and make sure every voice is heard. Or if you do an open dialogue, having that emotional awareness to say, well, who didn't speak?
during this meeting, and then having the awareness to go in and say, well, Vanessa, I noticed you didn't have a comment. Do you have anything you like to add? So those are just kind of a couple of ways that we're really approaching that work. But also these smaller breakout groups are really helping us as well, because we're able to do a lot more things. Like, we are actually trying to do small things that matter. Maybe you have a mindfulness workshop with your teams. It doesn't always have to be this planned agenda. Why don't you just go around just to talk, see how people are feeling, what they're doing to adapt. How are you getting through your day and being adaptable and resilient? And, you know, you're getting neat ideas. Like, I'm up to walking an hour a day. Well, people are saying and role modeling, I'm taking a break from 12 to 1 every day to take a walk midday. I feel refreshed. I feel de-stressed. Or I'm doing an evening walk. Or I'm writing in my gratitude journal. Or, you know, I'm doing aerobics online around the world. So these are things we can learn from one another. And we actually gathered a lot of ideas with our leaders on, let's come up with like the things you can be doing to get more interactive with your team. But also, like you said, encouraging the step away is very, very important for that long-term resiliency.
I do think there's something to that kind of breaking down the kind of levels and barriers, which can, I think, be one of the positive aspects of some of the outreach we do in remote work. One of the comments that we've gotten online was talking about neurodiverse individuals as being an example of a group who found that the shift to mediated online communication actually had some significant benefits in terms of equalizing the playing field in terms of communication. I'm gonna turn to, we've got a bunch of great questions starting to come in from our audience. So I think I'm going to pull a few of these out here. One of the ones that I've been hearing a lot about is the question of fairness and equity across all employees in similar situations. You know, how do we think about fairness and equity and the reactions of employees to these different experiences? Vanessa, do you want to maybe take a crack at talking about that?
One of the things that we talked about, when we were sort of preparing for this, was the value of things like micro affirmations. You know, it could be just showing that you're listening. It could be the things that, you know, Carla and I have been talking about actually engaging people, like making sure you go around and you've heard everybody's voice, that you have this emotional awareness. And these little things, you know, we think that they don't have a major impact, but they can actually show people that we do care. If they're struggling, you know, like with rough internet connection, if they're struggling with kids at home, if they're struggling with something, they don't feel like everyone's just moved on without them and left them behind, which I think is a major concern. And if you show that actually we do want to continue to engage you and we use these ways of kind of pulling people back in, I think that can be a way to sort of restore some of the inequities we see.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this. Those micro appreciations are so they just go such a long way. And it could be small, like you could send a thank you card. We have virtual thank you cards you can choose from. So those things become really key. But also in this point in time, regular feedback to your teams and your employees. And so something that we do very intentionally is we ask managers to do a formal check-in, like every quarter, to talk about how you're progressing in your goals, how is it going in that quarter. It could be very, very agile. And we're asking them to also have an annual career conversation. I've had amazing career conversations this year. People would think that during the pandemic that maybe this is something people are putting on hold, but they're not. And I've had amazing conversations where we spend time as leaders with our employees and ask them about, well, what's next in your career? Where do you think you're doing great? What skills do you want to build? What type of role are you interested in next? And where do you see your career going? These are those extra touch points that you can do with your teams to ensure that they remain engaged, and so are you.
It's interesting, you know, talking about that connects into, you know, the questions around how you engage your leaders, your managers, as you're trying to bring in these policies, because a lot depends on them being able to implement this effectively and to respond to these kind of various employee needs and demands. I mean, this managing under the pandemic, remote and hybrid work puts an enormous strain on the managers and leaders. How do you go about engaging them, making sure that they're handling this well?
Yeah, so what we really are focused on is the experience of the manager and the experience of the employee at IBM. And so we co-create with them. Co-creation with employees is really key. A lot of things are still leader-led. And what we found in this past 18 months, if you don't do it with your teams and you do it without your teams, you may miss the mark. But lastly, you have some success metrics that you go back, you iterate, you get feedback, you survey, and you know what outcomes you want to achieve, but you have measurements and you make sure you go back and you ensure that you've met them. And then if you have not, how are you going to iterate to make it better as you continue to do this work?
You know, one thing to keep in mind is that as much as this has been a major challenge and a shift, it's also just a huge opportunity. And a lot of managers are excited to try some new things. And so keeping that in mind, that this is actually a time where people are more open than usual to changing the way that they get things done. And so you can implement these things that maybe in the past there might have been pushback, but now people are like, whatever. I'll try something new.
Yeah, I think that's one of the real lessons we have learned is that we are more adaptable, I think, than we might have thought we were. You know, I think if you had asked us 2 years ago, you know, could we all do this kind of level of remote work, we probably would have said no. That's crazy. I mean, there's no way that'll work. You know, people are more adaptable, I think, than we often think. People are more resilient than we think. Here's a question I think is a tricky one that I'm going to talk to maybe Carla to talk about her experience on. But somebody asked about how employers have adjusted or dealt with employee disciplinary performance improvement actions and plans during the pandemic and moving forward. And that kind of jumps out to me because, you know, I think we know that there are employees who are having difficult situations before the pandemic and maybe in a performance improvement type situation. And then we went into this pandemic and everybody's disrupted. And then we're still trying to manage people's performance through the pandemic, you know, when to some degree we're sort of saying, well, you know, that's the COVID years. And so everybody gets a pass on stuff, right? How do we handle that? How do we continue to kind of manage and deal with those kind of difficult disciplinary or performance issues while also dealing with all the pandemic stuff?
Yeah, I think that that has been a challenge. You know, I think that you continue to work with your employees, the leaders begin to continue to work with their employees to work through any type of performance issues. You're just doing it in a virtual way. And that's why I said we really focused in on deploying a way in which we interacted last year where it was more frequent. So opposed to waiting for like the cursory annual review at the end of the year where people may be surprised by their performance, we are doing more frequent interactions every quarter, and you could do it at any time where you could collaborate around goals and give regular feedback, even virtually through our tools by which we actually measure performance with our employees. And so the regular dialogue is really, really key. So you're really managing those things on the onset. You're not waiting for them to kind of fester over a longer period of time. And you're right, you know, in the scenario where people may take breaks, they may have to take time off, they may have been ill for COVID, you shouldn't be penalized for that. We made that really, really clear with our leaders that we don't want people to be penalized because they have to take care of their children or because they have to take time off, they're ill, someone in their family's ill. And people were very worried about that. And so you have to, again, this is where we talk about meeting people where they are, showing the empathy and compassion, but also being able to have the discussion on how do we get things back on track.
Yeah, I think that's some of the hardest issues that you know, managers are facing right now. I think it's that tension between you know, the kind of imperatives that still exist of, you know, ensuring we have performance and we're getting the work done at the same time as, you know, compassion being, you know, really important during this time, and to recognize the difficult situations that employees are confronting in their lives. I mean, I think that's to go back to our, you know, starting point premise, right? We're seeing this kind of collapse of the work-life boundaries, you know, and this was sort of a traditional, we look back in our sort of labor history going back to the 1950s, you know, we've had this stark division between the world of work and the world of family, and they're separate and they should never meet. Well, they've been, that boundary's been gradually getting more permeable over time, and we've just seen it, you know, collapse over the last year and a half. And that forces us to deal with these different aspects in a totally new way.
I think a lot of what you just said as well made me think about all the things we've had to ask people for over the past year or two. Many of us have been confronted with these situations where we've had to rely on our coworkers. We've had to ask bosses for, you know, more flexible arrangements. And what I've found myself and in my research, as well as talking to people, is that people are much more amenable and happy to make adjustments and to work with people and to sort of make things work than we tend to think. We usually hate asking for things, so we worry about rejection. But I hope for many of us that we've learned that that is actually a way that we can shape our work environment in the way that we really want to, and that we have more influence than we think to be able to do that, and that people are more willing to work with us than we think. So as I said earlier, this really is a chance for things to shift or change. And I think that's true for bosses to try new things. I think that's true for us too, to try new things and see what works for us. And I think that it should give us some sense of autonomy and optimism in the end.
Yeah. So I'll go back to kind of where I started with being intentionally flexible. So listening to your teams, listening to your employees, and that co-creation, it doesn't have to be leader-led. And this is just something that I think all of us have learned. I think the other thing, and I think making room for others. So we talked a lot about that, making sure you ensure every voice is heard in a meeting, that no one's left out. But also, this is a time in which fostering a culture of inclusion with inclusive behaviors, really being intentional about that, means you're going to have to be creative. And then lastly, I think that the last thing that I wanted to share is, you know, leading with that empathy and compassion, being really transparent and just really going into that vulnerable place where you don't have to have all the answers. Sometimes it's just important to be a great listener, but also being able to make that room to really solution and provide the interventions that are necessary. Don't wait too long to be responsive and act accordingly is really, really key. So that's what I recommend.
Yeah, I think that's such a great message, because I think one thing that, you know, we can really take away to connect across both your comments is, you know, this has been a hard time for people over this pandemic in so many ways, and it has intruded on our personal lives and work lives, and there's this sort of conflicts we're dealing with. But you know, people of good faith, and people I think in general are of good faith, are trying to work through things. You know, I think there is possibility for coming up with solutions, but also to take away lessons that we've learned from the experience and apply them going forward that will be helpful to us. I want to thank so much both Vanessa Bonds, Carla Grant Pickens, our two speakers today. It's been a real pleasure talking with you both today, and look forward to great conversations in the future. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to Work. You can subscribe to our podcast at work.ilr.cornell.edu or on iTunes. Do you have a recommendation for a guest or topic to be discussed on a future episode? Just click on the link in the show notes of this episode and leave your suggestions. Again, thank you for listening.